This is Business Beat. Welcome. Here each week, KBIA takes a look at the business and economic issues facing Mid-Missouri. I'm Christopher Husted. Coming up, we'll kick off a three-part series from Harvest Public Media on the science of the seed.
So what if I can find a protein that slows down sap flow in a corn plant? Doesn't need as much water. Drought.
For the introductory report, Amy Mayer explores the origins of gene transformation. But let's first start in Columbia, where as of February, landlords are required to maintain a list of all tenants. It's part of a new occupancy limitation disclosure ordinance recently passed by the city council. KBIA's Andrew Yost reports that the ordinance deals with several overcrowding issues concerning neighbors.
After multiple complaints were filed with Columbia's Office of Neighborhood Services for excess of traffic, trash accumulation, and lack of parking, the city council adopted an occupation limit disclosure ordinance. The ordinance aims to curtail the residential overcrowding in Columbia neighborhoods. Neighborhood Services Manager Lee Britt says the ordinance requires landlords to disclose the zoning district and occupancy limits to tenants in the lease agreement or in a separate form for each tenant.
We realize that it's one more thing that everybody has to do. We're asking property owners to take care of and real estate agents. But in the end, the real goal is to raise awareness so that everybody understands what the occupancy rules and limitations are for the place where they're living.
City Council Member Gary Crespel, who supports the ordinance, says overcrowding can correlate to other city issues, such as congested rush hour traffic. That's because of the high percentage of students who live off campus.
What's happening is some of the rental houses being rented to students, and there may be a four or five bedroom home, and they're putting four or five or six students living there, and all of them drive a car. So that one house has five or six cars there when there's only room for like two or three. So it not only runs down the property by over-occupying, but it's a parking issue for the neighborhood.
City Council members say they are discussing solutions to the student transit issue and are looking into incorporating more extensive student transit systems, which may help alleviate some of the overcrowding concerns. Andrew Yost, KBIA News.
Now let's turn our attention to the humble seed from which all grain production begins. The vast majority of the corn and soybeans in this country come from seeds that have been genetically modified. The controversial technology, which is nearly 30 years old, continues to make headlines. Here's Amy Mayer.
To clarify, genetic modification, gene transformation, and genetic engineering, even biotechnology in an agricultural context, all refer to the same thing: taking a gene from one organism and inserting it into another. The scientists who discovered this technology back in the 1980s weren't even looking for ways to improve plants. Iowa State University agronomy professor Khan Wong was on the laboratory front line then, working with biochemists studying agrobacteria and plant tumors. Their goal was to better understand human cancer.
Maybe the plant cancer can give us some insight of other type of tumor, right? So their motivation is to cure human disease. So by working on the plant disease, they hope we'll get some knowledge, but, you know, they completely open up a different can of worm, right?
They discovered that certain agrobacteria could infect a plant, cause a tumor, and then leave the disease behind even after the bacteria was removed. It's like if you had strep throat, a bacterial infection, but then after your course of antibiotics, the strep is gone, but the sore throat remains. Forever. Sounds horrible, right? The researchers figured out that the evil bacteria had a particular plasmid that did the dirty deed, exiting the bacteria and then inserting itself into the plant cell nucleus, thereby permanently changing the plant's genetics.
You know, the light bulb switch on and say, hey, we have a tool.
The research focus moved away from human cancer. Scientists in both academic and industry labs set about determining how they could harness this tool to move good traits. Now an ag giant, Monsanto emerged early as a leader in biotech. The company demonstrated successful gene transfer in tomato plants in 1987. At Monsanto's Chesterfield Village Research Facility near St. Louis, tour guide Tom Hokeen picks up the story.
Basically, we have scientists that figured out, you know, that gene that the bacteria move? Take the gene out. And we put a gene into the bacteria that we'd like to have moved. and the bacteria moved the gene for us.
He's in a long, dimly lit hallway, pointing to a large flat-screen monitor that shows an illustration of the soybean genome. He says the key is to identify a protein that has a desired effect on a plant and then figure out what gene to transfer to force the plant to produce that protein.
So what if I can find a protein that slows down sap flow in a corn plant? Doesn't need as much water. Drought. What if I can find a protein that allows a plant to photosynthesize a new way so I can spray Roundup over the top and not kill it?
Roundup is Monsanto's widely used herbicide, which previously farmers had to be careful not to spray on their crop plants because it would kill everything.
Do you know where they found the gene?
In a bacteria?
Yes. Living in the wastewater treatment plant, where we make Roundup.
In 1996, after meeting newly established regulatory requirements, Roundup-ready soybeans hit the market. So from aha moment to farmers' fields took less than 10 years. Today, genetic engineering is ubiquitous and controversial. With young technology, there's only so much data about safety and long-term impacts. And now that the technology is out of the lab and in people's pantries, some consumers are skeptical of the science and fearful of the implications.
Because there's some people call like Frankenseeds.
Mike Starr is the manager of the Seed Lab at Iowa State University, where this robot manages liquid samples to help with genetic testing of seeds. He says public perceptions vary by culture. In Europe, genetically modified products remain more closely regulated than here.
There's just more of a concern for some reason in Europe about you're messing with the genetics. And I've done a great deal of testing, and people have asked me whether I'm concerned about biotech seeds. Well, I'm not.
Starr has a small farm. Like many farmers, he's seen good results, even during last year's drought, from seeds containing modern traits, including genetically engineered ones. Within the scientific community, though, there is some recognition that the safety demonstrated today can't predict the ultimate impact on humans, plants, or the environment. Several states, including Missouri and Iowa, are considering mandatory labeling of foods containing genetically modified organisms, which is many. Over 90% of the country's corn and soybeans contain GMOs. That means they're in products from cereal to candy to soda. I'm Amy Mayer, Harvest Public Media.
Tune in to this week's Under the Microscope with Raymond Tunkekar for the conclusion to the Science of the Seed series. That's it for Business Beat today. I'm Christopher Husted. Thanks for listening.